Bandwidth for February has been provided by CacheFly, the fastest, most reliable CDN in the business. CacheFly delivers all of our content here 5x5, and they're the best. Check them out at cachefly.com, CacheFly, and let them know that you heard about them here on 5x5.
Well, good, because I'm recording, and I'm not going to stop for anything!
All right, I'm recording too.
Yeah!
Here we go.
Here we go!
3, 2, 1... We recorded this episode on February 18th, 2016. This is On the Grid, episode 154. This week, we talked about stainless steel appliances and the team section of the Friends of the website. Here we go. Hi, Andy.
Woo!
You were excited.
Making a podcast.
Oh, boy.
I like to get pumped up about stuff, you know? I got a lot of energy and love to share with the world. Speaking of screaming into the mic, no Dan this week.
Just me and you.
Sad. He was on fire last week.
He was.
I wanted to capture that in a bottle and sell it to people.
We captured it with a microphone. We put it out for people to hear. Is that close?
Are you? Do we make any money off of it?
Nah. Well, actually, I mean, one ad.
Oh, there you go. $20.
Did you Kanye this week?
Oh.
Did you listen to some Kanye this week?
Yeah, of course.
Read some tweets?
Got to listen to the new Kanye when it comes out. He was all over Twitter. I read some of the tweets. I don't think I read them all. There were a lot.
Did you? Well, number one, is it the greatest piece of work in the 20th century?
I'm going no. But I do like it. I will continue to listen to it. I'm going to put it somewhere between not on the scale of To Pimp a Butterfly, but I think I'm going to like it a little more than I like Yeezus.
Oh, I definitely like it more than Yeezus already.
Somewhere on that scale.
Not more than Dark Twisted Fantasy.
No, definitely not.
Definitely not more than College Dropout.
Well, those are kind of different things, but sure, I agree. If he made College Dropout now, I'd be like, this album sucks. What are you doing?
I might still appreciate it. I like that old Kanye.
He's very of its time. You like that old Kanye? Chop up that soul Kanye? Yeah, I mean, that was good. I like that too. I listened to it plenty, but I feel like that album that came out now would just be not relevant to our time.
Maybe. If it were updated with modern day references. Actually, I have to say, I think 30 Hours is basically just Last Call, but a worse version of Last Call. Do you agree?
Yeah, it does have a lot of Last Call going on in it. I don't know if I would agree that it's worse, because I'm not the biggest fan of Last Call, though I did write a newsletter about it once.
Oh, I am a big fan of Last Call. I think that's a great track.
I don't love the ad-lib tracks, honestly. I mean, I really like the content of Last Call. Like, I like knowing that story, and I like hearing him tell it.
Yep.
But it's not like a song I'm like, time to listen to Last Call now.
So actually, I am curious. Did you read his tweets this week and think, I don't know how much I want to support Kanye right now. I'm not sure about all this.
You know, I did turn a corner on Kanye, and it wasn't the I'm no longer going to support Kanye corner. Because, yeah. Obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, I still like the man's music. I'm still planning on listening to it. I will buy his albums when they continue to come out. I'm still supporting him in that sense. But I feel like one of those tweets somewhere along the line turned a corner, and no longer am I excited to like explain to my family from the suburbs why all of the dislike of Kanye is completely unfair and racist. Which is usually, I am that guy, you think Kanye is rude. Let me list for you some rude white people you never thought were rude, and all the double standards, and all of the why isn't he allowed to talk about how great he is when everybody else talks about how great they are, like all that stuff. Somewhere along the line, it turned a corner, and I'm just not going to be doing that anymore, I don't think. Honestly, I think the thing that got me maybe the most, which might say a lot about me, was like the sex negativity, like putting your finger in your butt is not cool. I don't know. That just seems like, I don't know, unhealthy message. I would have thought Kanye would have been all about that freaky stuff.
Maybe. You would think so.
But yeah, and then people pointed out, you know, that he's been horrible to Amber Rose basically forever. You know, there was the comment from years ago about taking 40 showers or something after he was with her, which is not good, but I don't know.
So it wasn't asking Mark Zuckerberg for $1 billion and saying, don't build homes in Africa, give it to me, Kanye. That's not what got you?
Did he say don't build homes in Africa?
I think it was something along the lines of like, you're putting your money into building homes in Africa when you could be supporting the greatest artists of all time.
Well, maybe it's not an either or proposition. I'm all for Kanye asking Zuckerberg for money, and I'm all for Zuckerberg giving Kanye money.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put that out there right now. Am I saying that we shouldn't still give money to charity? No, but, you know, sure, give Kanye some money. Why not? If I was Zuckerberg, I would. He's got plenty of money just sitting around. That's got to be a tax write-off somehow. No, that didn't get me. The line about Taylor Swift didn't get me. That, I think, has also been blown a little bit out of proportion. Like, I saw, the headline I saw was, Kanye says Taylor Swift owes him sex for making her famous. And I was like, that's fucking horrible. Like, that is monstrous. I almost can't believe he said that. And then he didn't really say that. He just says, maybe they'll have sex.
Right.
Which, to me, doesn't feel anywhere near as bad. I mean, I think, honestly, I think it's worse to try and claim her fame and to call her a bitch than it is to suggest you might sleep with her at some point. Because, you know, I don't know. Kanye, we've had the discussion about, can you separate the art from the artist?
And I know.
I still can. And I used to not just support his art, but also support his character. And I think I'm kind of done supporting the character of Kanye.
I don't know. I had a friend ask me should I just stop supporting him financially? Which, actually, the good news is I haven't figured out a way to support him financially yet.
You're trying your best.
I don't know how to do that yet.
You could buy one of his sneakers.
You can sign up for a free trial for Tidal, and that's about as far as I'm going to go. I don't think I'm going to pay for that, and I haven't found a way to buy the album. So, I don't know. But actually, I mean, do you see the difference between, like, still being able to enjoy a thing and supporting someone financially? Do you draw the line there? Do you care?
Yeah, it's not a thing for me. I don't know. Part of the reason it's not a thing is I feel like there are a million other monstrous people that I'm probably indirectly or directly financially supporting without my awareness of it. That to be aware of one of the people, you know, I don't know. CEOs of big companies, I think, are largely monstrous. So, yeah, I feel like it's kind of inevitable that you're going to end up supporting things you don't ethically or morally stand for. Which is not to say you should just do it willy-nilly, but there are lines, right? I don't know where the line is. I guess, like, as far as I'm concerned, Kanye's money is not what makes him a disrespectful asshole sometimes. So me not giving him money is not going to fix his being a disrespectful asshole. If he was, like, you know, taking that money and then, I don't know, I guess buying boats to cut off donations going to Africa because he deserved the money more, then sure. Yeah. Then there's a direct correlation. It's like, okay, well, my money will do a bad thing as opposed to my money will go into the bank account of somebody whose politics I don't necessarily agree with or whose, you know, stance on respecting women or other things I don't necessarily agree with.
Yeah, I'm not done. I'm not done supporting either.
I am done, you know, explaining to people in the suburbs why Kanye. I miss the old Kanye, but not the quiet chops up the soul Kanye. I miss the George Bush doesn't care about black people Kanye. I can defend that all day. That's the best thing I've ever heard. if he's going to be doing ridiculous shit, why not more of that instead of I don't mess with the butt. I don't mess around in that area.
I think there's a secret. There's like part of me that thought maybe he is on another level and these are all kind of like staged acts. And then sometime this week it was like, I don't know. Maybe he's just freaking out all the time, no matter what.
I will say this. I think he thinks he's serious about running for president in 2020.
Yeah, I do too.
I mean, how could he not think he's serious after watching what Trump has done? Like, it seems like there's a direct correlation. Like, Trump's doing this. I can do that too. I believe he could do it. So I think he thinks he's doing that. And I would not vote for him, which I think says a lot. Because if anyone's going to vote for him, it would be me, probably.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't.
Well, maybe that's what it was. This was the week of Kanye losing your vote.
Probably.
I don't know. This week just seems like the week of people saying dumb stuff and people I would want to otherwise defend. And I'm like, ugh. God, like, what? And then we just had the conversation last week about, or was it 2 weeks ago, about people not, like, don't defend your thing. Just listen. Just listen to what happens. I feel that about Kanye. Killer Mike said a dumb thing this week.
What, the having uterus doesn't make you qualified to be president?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't know how to get into it. The idea of, like, just the world just waiting for someone to say anything and then pouncing on it, as opposed to the world becoming a more progressive place. And I'm glad everybody's asking questions about it. Like, do
it's
you
like
feel
these,
like
these people don't realize that history has its eyes on them?
That's what I'm. That's kind of what I'm asking. Like, you know what I mean? There's that kind of the balance between those two things. Of, oh, I can't wait to pounce on somebody saying something stupid. This is going to be a fun frenzy, and people getting overly defensive because they think that thing is happening to them. And more this week than ever, I don't know which side I'm on. Like, do I think there's a media frenzy and people are too politically correct and isn't that terrible, blah, blah, blah? Or am I like, yeah, everybody should be asking questions. Stop getting so defensive. Kind of stupid. Don't worry about it.
I do think that we are definitely seeing more of the ugly parts of people than we would have 15, 20, certainly 50 or 100 years ago. Like being in the public eye now means that like almost everything you do can be photographed, tracked, tweeted, scrutinized in a way that like if anybody were to follow us around and quote everything we said, we would certainly come off as monstrous sometimes too, I'm certain.
Oh yeah, sure.
Taking things out of context and, you know, whatever. So I think that's part of it. I think that, I don't know. Like the idea of celebrity has changed, I think, pretty dramatically in that celebrity, I think, used to be pretty directly linked to wealth and to success in a certain field.
Yeah.
And now celebrity is just a thing that happens to some people because maybe they're funny on Twitter or maybe they, you know, run some thing online. Or maybe they happen to just say something once that got retweeted 20,000 times. Like, I feel like because of that, we've, like, lost an ability to... I don't know. No, I feel like if Twitter was around, I think it speaks really highly of someone like Obama that, you know, has there ever been a person as scrutinized until maybe the next president will be scrutinized even more and mm-hmm. yet still... What's the worst thing you've ever seen Obama do?
Smoke? I don't know.
He called Kanye an asshole at one time, but that was the greatest thing he's ever done.
I mean, it's kind of funny
jackass.
Though.
Called him a jackass. That's what it was.
I mean, I think Kanye does act like a jackass sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. But, that's yeah. I think that's part of his thing.
Yeah.
That used to be my main defense of Kanye was he is a jackass in the way that so many white people are jackasses and everyone just kind of tolerates. But when he's a jackass, all of a sudden it becomes about... Well, he's not allowed to do that, and respectability, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I feel like he's conscious of that. I think he knows that he's intentionally rubbing people the wrong way because it exposes a double standard that society has mm-hmm. for people. But there's a line somewhere. Crossed it for me. Maybe I just got older. Maybe I just got boring and conservative. We're all on the path, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't figure out where... you know, it's just I have that instinct sometimes where I see something on Twitter or I see something online and I'm like, oh, I really want to defend. And then I'm like, am I being that person that's just like going into defense mode because somebody said something about a thing that I like or like a thing that I do? Or is it actually something that's worth defending? Is it something that is being taken out of context and is worth saying out loud?
And I think a really important thing to ask yourself is like, is this the right context in which to defend it? Is defense acceptable here?
Yeah.
Like a perfect example, I think, is this Taylor Swift line, which was, I think, is a combination of two things, right? Like one, it's kind of a fucked up lyric in a song. Yep. It's a messed up thing to say about a person. It's disrespectful to her. Doesn't treat her like a human. But also, I think the media response to it blew it a little bit out of proportion. The idea that he was saying that she owes him something, I think, is reading significantly between the lines. But is it the appropriate time to get on Twitter and talk about how the media is blowing out of proportion? No, probably not, because you want to be the guy that's defending this the monstrous idea that a woman is barely a human being and it's just a thing that you can make famous and then we'll have sex with you. So it's like there can be injustices and there can be things that are wrong without you needing to point it out and be the constant defender of them.
Yeah.
Which is something that maybe some people are hearing and think, duh, obvious, but certain people, I think people like you and I, Matt, that was a lesson I had to learn. For a long time, I was like, well, if something is wrong, I should talk about how wrong it is, and then we'll all get smarter, and that's good. But yeah. No, there's a time and a place, and I've gotten really good at just not responding to things that prior would have absolutely elicited a response from me.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's like, well, I guess there's a little bit of worry about that. It's like, yeah, it's not really worth it because what are you going to get out of it? And is it like, how far really do you want to dig into that? Maybe that specific Taylor Swift line. But then there's the other side of it where it's like, well, if someone fucks up a little bit, enough that it's not worth defending, is it just justified that the world attacks them because everybody goes, well...
Well, those same people that are attacking them also shouldn't be attacking them. We all got to chill the hell out.
Yeah. But I mean, know. I think it's a calibrated thing. Like, you could... The world should not be attacking them, but also, like, I like that the world's kind of getting better about this stuff and looking out for women, looking out for people of color. Like, if you say something terrible, you're going to get called out on it. That part seems good. But the part where we're just, like, so ready, anybody says anything, and we just cannot wait because we're bored,
and then we get to tell them that they're terrible people.
Well, the flip side is that I think our collective memory is much shorter, too.
Mm.
Like, sure,
you can
maybe
say whatever you want, and then everybody forgets about it tomorrow.
Maybe peak outrage over, was it Wiz Khalifa, right? Or is that who Kanye was beefing with? Who is Amber Rose's current?
Yeah, Wiz Khalifa.
Wiz Khalifa. Maybe peak, that Twitter beef. Everybody was all eyes and freaking out and thought it was a big deal. Chances are that it would be a distant memory in like 2 months. We'll be like, was there a Twitter thing between Kanye and Wiz? And we'll just, it's not a thing because so much of this stuff is happening all the time that I think it very much is like a brief moment. And there are certain circumstances where, you know, brief moments for certain people affect their lives forever. But for someone like Kanye, you know, it's not going to affect him so negatively. So I feel like to a certain degree, it's just the cost of being a public figure and of saying what you know to be controversial things and writing lyrics that you know are going to be controversial and make people say something about them. I think that's just part of the deal. Here's what I hope. I hope that I agree, Matt. Like, I don't want people to not criticize Kanye for saying some stupid shit about Taylor Swift. Criticize him all day. I'm not ever going to try and talk people's criticism down on that point. Especially, like, anybody standing up for women or for any other marginalized group, like, never going to tell them to stop doing that under any circumstances. That said, I do hope that focus on things like a lyric Kanye wrote that intentionally was meant to incite some sort of response. I hope this focus on these kinds of things and these little like flare ups on Twitter where people get real, you know, indignant and righteous for a few minutes. I hope that doesn't detract from people kind of keeping their eyes on the bigger issues in society.
Yeah.
What's another good example? All right, here's one. Here's a controversial one. So this thing was making the rounds on Twitter. It was a screenshot of someone's Facebook post. I'm going to stop myself right there and talk about how hilarious that already is. But it was making the rounds on Twitter. And it was some dude had written on Facebook about how many examples of how black music artists had lost album of the year or new artist of the year or something to some other white act that later basically fell apart. Like Kanye didn't win best new artist because Maroon 5 won. And where's Maroon 5 now? And some other examples I can't remember. I was talking about kind of systematic problems in the music industry and in culture, which is great. But also, I largely feel like if that is what you're worried about when it comes to the rights of people of color and the social justice problems in the world, if you're mostly worried about who's winning the fucking Grammys, like, I think you're missing a big point, like all the police shooting and killing people and all of the systematic poverty and all of the problems in terms of who gets promoted at work and who has leadership positions in jobs. Like, let's stay mad about that stuff. And the Grammys is a fucking old school white ass organization that makes stupid decisions all the time about everybody. Like, I'm not defending it. Like, I think it is emblematic of a problem, but for that to get bazillion million retweets and for people to, you know, barely remember the names of all the innocent people that were shot by the police, it's like, I don't know. Feel like maybe some things just are the things that are packaged up to be, viral, the sticky things are not necessarily the things that we really should be focusing on. And I think more and more it's gotten easy to just go with the sticky thing instead of focus on what actually deserves our attention. Kony 2012. You know, Matt, when you work at a small company, when you help run it, there's a lot of stuff you have to do that is unrelated to whatever you love that got you into that career. And for us, one of those things is when you hire a new person, you ever thought about all the stuff you have to buy? They're going to need a laptop. They're going to need a laptop stand. They're probably going to need some peripherals. They prefer a trackpad or they prefer a mouse. Are they okay with the Apple keyboard? Or do they want someone that is some ergonomic thing because they care about their wrists and their future health and repetitive stress injuries? Like a real show-off.
So you're saying you're a designer, you're a businessman, and now you're an IT professional,
Excuse me, Matt. I'm a businessman, not a businessman. Yeah.
So you're an IT man.
Got to do all the IT stuff, and it is legitimately annoying. We have a spreadsheet, or actually it's a page on our company wiki, which is all the stupid stuff we have to do when we hire a new employee, and it is a lot.
Well, I've got an answer to one of those at least.
Which one?
Bushel is a simple cloud-based tool for anyone to manage Apple devices in the workplace.
We use Apple devices in our workplace because they're stainless steel cubes, as God intended.
Bushel allows you to easily set up and protect all of the devices that you distribute to your team or those that your team already has.
And that's another thing. After you give the person the computer, you have to explain, now you have to enable Key Vault. You have to encrypt your entire hard drive. Make sure you save this key somewhere safe, because if you don't forget your password, we're going to have to be able to get back in with this key. We're going to put it somewhere I'm not going to say on the podcast for security reasons.
Sure, all the things you might have to do, like provide access to company emails or install work apps to the device. You can do it individually or all at once.
That's a whole thing, too.
And you can separate and protect your team's personal data from company data. That's probably why you didn't say the password earlier.
Well, not specifically because of that reason, because I don't want any of the data in anyone's hand. Anyone's hands. It's late.
It is late. Probably so late, you're tired, you're going to forget stuff, you might lose a device.
Yeah, that's happened before. We had someone's laptop stolen out of their car while they were in the mall for 45 minutes.
See? No good. But with Bushel, if a device is ever lost or stolen, you can remotely lock it or wipe it, so you don't have to deal with losing company data. Access all these features to easily manage your Apple devices wherever you want, whenever you want.
And use Apple devices, for goodness sake, people.
Bushel makes the complex simple, so you can focus on what matters most.
That thing you love that got you into that career.
Oh, I was going to say all the other stuff in the spreadsheet.
No, I hate the spreadsheet. It's a spreadsheet of sadness. But you know it's not a spreadsheet of sadness? Getting to sit down and talk about shapes and colors with a new Shapes and Colors cadet.
Your first free devices are free forever, and each additional device is just $2 a month with no contracts or commitments. You can learn more at bushel.com/grid.
Bushel, don't be like Bob, that guy that had his laptop stolen from him before he left the mall on his very first day of employment. So, yeah. I don't know. I don't know anything about any of this stuff.
That's fine. I know something you do know about.
What is that?
Stainless steel appliances?
I thought it was going to be things I was wrong about.
No.
You know a lot about the things I'm wrong about.
I do. I have a list of that I can save till later if you want.
Yeah, so I casually mentioned offhand in the last episode that I didn't like stainless steel appliances. And I thought this was a known fact. I thought we had trod this territory. But maybe we picked up some new listeners.
I think of it as a known fact. But here's the thing I don't think you've ever done, is explain why.
I thought I did explain why, but maybe I didn't. So we can go into it now. A couple people asked and were curious to find out. So here's my deal with stainless steel appliances. First thing we have to get straight is that stainless steel is a facade. Nothing is made of stainless steel. You don't make a stainless steel refrigerator or a stainless steel stove or a stainless steel microwave or whatever. You make
You're telling me this thing isn't made out of solid gold?
Well, some things are made out of solid gold, like jewelry.
Sure, small stuff.
We talk about how when I found out that, you know gold, right? Are you familiar with gold?
I'm familiar with gold.
Sure. So when I was a kid, I was like, oh, people just inflated the value of this stupid thing because it's just shiny and somewhat rare. And it's so stupid that we make jewelry out of it because it's so dumb. And at some point, I had the realization that that's not why gold is in jewelry. Gold's in jewelry because it's completely unreactive. It's like, mm-hmm. It just lasts forever.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I think that's cool. So the stainless steel is a facade, which I think if you really think about, will make you dislike stainless steel appliances as much as I do, because basically there's an appliance in there, and they've just wrapped it in a stainless steel cube because they think it looks good. We've talked about on the show in the past about some things that I feel are objective, some things I feel are subjective, and, you know, taste and all that kind of stuff. I don't think this is an objective truth about appliances. This is just my personal taste. I recognize that anyone else's opinion on this is totally 100% valid, and I don't really have a desire to argue with them, but I will explain my thinking.
Okay.
So, number one, it's a facade. Number two, and this is the big one for me, is that it looks industrial. Like, for some reason, some confluence of, like, technology and minimalism has landed in our world such that things that look industrial and commercial are like in vogue for people's homes. But like, I don't want that in my home. It's like an industrial style thing. Like when your refrigerator is a, you know, perfect stainless steel rectangular prism, and your stove is a rectangular prism made of stainless steel, and everything's a rectangular prism made of stainless steel. Like, that's not friendly. It's not warm. That's not something you can have a real relationship with. It's just a stainless steel cube. For some reason, people think that, oh, it should be as minimal and pared down and, you know, lacking any sort of ornamentation. And the result of that is that they made a very ornamental, perfect box and put it around insert appliance here.
I mean, I have to ask, though, like, yes, stainless steel, it is a facade, but, like, what fridge exists that doesn't have that?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, they're definitely covered in something, but...
Like, the most honest version of that thing would be exposed wires, and I don't know if you would call it a general mess, but like maybe not the most aesthetically pleasing thing.
No, I mean, I guess if you think about some like industrial freezers, right? You're just seeing like the bare minimum steel to like hold in the insulation, right?
Yeah.
And stainless steel is not entirely aesthetic. There is a function to it, right? Like the reason it is stainless in your kitchen is because it will get covered in food and stuff. And if it was anything that could tarnish or, you know, chemically react with something, that would obviously be not great. So there's a reason they chose stainless steel and not something else.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's the big thing for me is it looks industrial, like it's very commercial equipment. So for me, like I want a white fridge I can attach magnets to. That just feels like a fridge that you would have in your home. You can put things on it and you can, you know, feel like it's something that's it's the color a fridge should be, right? Fridges should be white.
Oh, so wait, is this about white? Is this more about white and color than it is about material?
No, I think stoves should be black or dark gray. The specific stove that I like, which we can link to in the show notes, the egregiously expensive stove that I'm into, is a cast iron stove. So the whole thing's made of cast iron, and then it's just enameled on the surface, which to me feels more honest. Like the inside, it's the same thing the outside is made of. It's just, you know, been enameled on the outside to have a cleanable surface that's easy to deal with.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. My main thing is I think people have had the wool pulled over their eyes about things that look industrial and somehow that being like good design if it looks industrial, and something that's not good design or something that's not industrial looking is supposed to look like, you know, kitschy or, you know, hokey. But I don't think that's true. I think you get good appliances. Also, I don't think, here's the other thing. The stainless steel world, the stainless steel ethos is an ethos that believes everything should match. Fuck that. Fuck matching. Your stove should look like your stove. Fridge should look like your fridge. Everything should be a tool unto itself. That is, you know, the color, shape, size, texture that makes sense for what it is. Stainless steel is the average of all things. It's just, well, we need one thing to cover all the things in so everything can match because Williams and Sonoma convinces everything should match. Let's go with this completely unobjectionable stainless steel. It's just, you know, gray, shiny. That'll work for all surfaces.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that. I think it's bad on a stove. Your stove should be black because it's going to get splattered with stuff all the time. If it's anything that shows any mess, stainless steel, it's going to be constantly dirty.
I think it's fair. I can't really argue with that.
Does that answer people's questions at all, you think?
I hope so. I hope it does. I'm just indifferent towards that. Like, it's a facade like any other facade. Most things are going to have it. I prefer it to the white fridge, but I think it's just because the white fridge to me just seems like an old thing. It feels old.
So here's the thing. Are you picturing, like, you know, that weird, almost like faux scaly texture rubber on the outside of the fridge?
That's exactly what I'm thinking.
Because that's bad. That's just ugly. That's like a cheap way to make a cleanable surface and cover something in like a plasticky film so that the steel underneath won't rust or react with something. What I really want an enameled fridge, which I can also put a picture of in the show notes. I'll send you a lot of appliances for the show notes.
Oh, we'll put in so many.
We just need to restart Hypercritical. That's our calling in life.
Hey, we could do that. We just dig into everything. Dig into Kanye tweets, dig into fridges.
Generally, I feel like the other thing about the stainless steel stuff is very, very often the things that look stainless steel are like plastic with like the thinnest layer of stainless steel around them. Like it's too easy to make something actually shitty look like it's made of like nice stainless steel and like it's a nice thing. Like this stove is just cast iron and you can see the cast iron and there's nowhere for any bullshit to hide. Bullshit hides behind stainless steel, I said in air quotes. One of my biggest like revelations in all of life was just that shit shouldn't match. I feel like everyone thinks stuff should match. I don't know why. Is it like some like animal part of our brain that's just like pattern matching and we're like, ah, yes, we found a pair, good. Like what is it? Why is matching so good?
I mean, I think in something like that, it's a show of wealth because you can afford to buy all the things at once that go together. Like, it is opposed to you've gathered these things over time as you afford them. Like, I think of mismatch as, what I do with my life is, like, I buy a piece of furniture or something when I can afford it, and then I go get the next thing, as opposed to, like, I can't afford to buy a whole, like, set of stuff that goes together, right? Yeah. I can't afford to buy a bed that matches the couch that matches the chair. Because that's going to be many thousands of dollars. So I just have to get the thing when I can afford it at the time. And then it arrives. And then now I have a couch that's different than the bed that I have. That's different than the, I don't know what, the chair that I don't have yet, but I will soon. I think that's why matching.
I think that's a big part of it. And as I listen to you talk, I think Like, matching is this promise of the world that is just simply not borne out in reality. The promise that, like, everything's fine. Like, everything is totally A-okay. We're on top of this. We're in control. Humans know what's going on. We're totally not screwing everything up. That's what matching is. But,
well, because I think actually,
wake up, people. Like, wake up, sheeple.
Well, actually, hold on a second. Like, here's what's interesting. Matching is like, I think of it as you hired an interior designer for your home and they picked everything at one time, which is a very expensive thing to do. And because you were able to pick everything at one time, well, what's a way to prove that? You matched it, right? But we do the same thing in our design work.
Like, hey, what's up, branding?
You don't design things that don't match. You're talking about this for the home, right? You're not talking about this in your own work.
It's not a direct comparison to, like, you know, graphic design or like interface design work.
Yeah.
Like, because I don't think the idea of matching is the same. Like, oftentimes on a website, like, it is the same thing. Like,
right.
If you had two refrigerators, one in, you know, for whatever reason, you had like a freezer. I was trying to think of a good example. What would you have two of in your house reasonably? Cabinets, right? You've got like multiple cabinets in your kitchen. Should those be completely different? No, that's probably going a little bit to the extreme of not matching.
Yeah.
But like the thing is, the thing should just be what it is, as good as it can be. I think that idea still applies to websites, but websites are things that are exactly the same, right?
So previously I was talking about like the idea of wealth leads to matching, or like it's a show of wealth. In websites, we wouldn't say wealth, but maybe say efficiency, right? It's less efficient to make something not match. It's much easier to make something match.
Yeah,
right?
By default, everything matches until you done fuck it up.
Yeah, so it's about like, it requires a lot of extra effort to make everything different. So if we're, not that I think everything is about effort.
And sometimes that's justifiable. Like, do I think the checkout button should be different than the button that signs you into the website? Yeah, they're both buttons, but I don't think they should match. Those should be different buttons because they perform very different actions and you click them in very different contexts and very different states of mind.
Yeah.
So I would say my ethos still applies. Sure. You might not be able to look at
things that do different jobs don't necessarily have to look the same. Or maybe it's actually detrimental.
They should look different, I think, whenever they can. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, it applies to everything. Like clothes, right? Like I don't think clothes should match. I think you look like an idiot when your clothes match.
Mm-hmm.
Look at you, matchy guy. Congratulations. Your socks match your sweatshirt perfectly. Why? What is wrong with you? So yeah, clothes, all interior design and home goods. Asymmetry is great. Very, very good. Everyone should be asymmetrical everything. I don't know. Matching is just, it feels so, maybe it's like the fluffiest and maybe most core part of my problem with modernism.
Mm.
The idea that things should just be the same. Like, why? Shut up. Why should things be the same? Give me your lunch money.
I can see why they would. Cheaper to make things the same sometimes.
Well, yeah. And when that's the case, great.
Like in the appliance example, it's more expensive to get everything all at once. But in an apartment building, if everything's just the same module that you repeat, as opposed to things you have to make different, that is cheaper.
Yeah, and I think modernism came, as we've discussed, from, you know, Industrial Revolution. We're going to start manufacturing things in a very consistent way. Therefore, now we actually need to think about what is the average of this thing. No longer are we just hand-carving rocking chairs. We need to think about the optimal rocking chair. And poof, design is born. We now need to make assumptions and, you know, cut people off and average things. Or before, you just did the thing. But yeah, so I think that's kind of where it came from. And the idea that things should match, like, people are always trying to match the woods in all of their furniture. And it's like, first of all, you're not going to. I hate to break it to you. It's not going to look perfect. And second of all, it just looks, okay, great. What's so great about, a light pine? Why do you really love rock maple so much? What is it about rock maple? This is my one coworker, Josh. He and I do all of the, like, I guess like office related stuff. We're just, we like making decisions about that kind of stuff. We have opinions about it. And he is very much the quintessential modernist. Like, he wants everything to match and be perfectly clean and nothing should be on the counter and everything should be stainless steel. And so we're always kind of butting heads, and I'm always trying to justify why things shouldn't match to him. And he's always trying to justify spending the money to make things match. So I think he kind of really got to something there with the money aspect of it. It's definitely a sign of wealth, I think.
To be clear too, I think, if I had a new home and I could afford to buy all new stainless steel appliances, I might like that. It's just never come up.
You can like whatever you want. This is not one of the things I'm going to get objective about.
Oh, no, you said that earlier. I don't think you're going to yell at me. I'm just saying, I think I might enjoy that they all match. I don't, but it might just be because of culture. Because I don't share the ethos of things that do different things should look the same, right? Like, that's not really a thing I care about. I might just think I live in a fancy place now. I've tricked myself because that's what everybody else thinks, which I think is how it goes. You don't put a lot of thought into it. You just think, that's what nice looks like. Now I live in a nice place. This is great.
Someday I'll share my my folder of things I've collected, you know, like my local Pinterest.
Yep.
It's I think it says a lot about my taste and values.
Courier.
Well, actually, the most interesting question we got this week is about, do you want to get into the diversity issue and the our team section doesn't look like this?
Sure.
I can feel like we've addressed it a little bit, but like, it's by far the most, I don't know if I want to go into another 30 minutes of logo talk. We've done that 3 times in a row.
That was the one that got the least votes on Twitter.
The most votes, everybody wants to know what your favorite font is.
Courier. Moving on.
I don't want to have that conversation. So,
I really do like Courier, though. For all people that think I'm trolling, I'm not trolling. I think it's
beautiful.
Are you
trying to say Courier?
I thought Courier was an acceptable pronunciation of that. Yeah, let's get into that other question. Favorite font, okay. Courier. Just look up about how movie scripts are written and typeset. That's why it's my favorite.
Okay, cool. All right, so we have our website, idisagreewithandy.man.gold, which has been the most successful listener outreach we've ever done.
Our conversions, our listener engagement metrics are going through the roof.
So we have a question I thought was interesting, which we've addressed briefly, but not to a huge degree. So here you go. This is addressed to you, Andy, by the way, because this is your website.
Yeah, because it's on my website.
You seem very passionate about the need for greater diversity within the design community. However, the Our Team section of your company's website contradicts your strong feelings. Does your company currently have any plans in place to align your business practices with your position about the state of the community? This is from Matt Becker, and he said, yes, we can read it on the show.
There we go.
Andy, what are you going to do about this?
So this is a chicken and egg situation in that the Our Team section of our website that Matt is referencing is the reason that I care so much about the these topics we discuss so regularly. I only became really aware of them and started to think about them critically in the past few years. And it's just been entirely because of running Friends of the Web and realizing very, very quickly that it's a very difficult thing to do. And it's something a lot of people ignore. And if you just hire people that are your friends, you end up with a very certain type of company. And then all sorts of nights spent lying awake thinking about what actual duty we have to the world at large, to others, to make a workspace where anybody can have a job, all sorts of questions. The quick short answer is that Friends of the Web is not the best example of a diverse workforce. Still a small team, obviously, but it could be a lot better. I will say that a big reason it's not great is because we started the company with 4 white dudes. So that's, you know, more than a third of the company right there is, you know, the founders. Which is obviously not starting out on the best foot. And when we started the company, we had no even faint idea that this would become something we would care about or was an issue that we should be aware of. So to actually answer the question practically, I would say about a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago, we started to really carefully think about exactly what we needed to do in terms of policies and practices of the company to hopefully make the future better than the past has been. And what this has amounted to is a total changing of the way we hire people. So we now post jobs on many, many sites. Whenever we go to hire some people, we also have 2 or 3 different sites that are specifically dedicated to people of color in tech that we post the job listings on. It involved overhauling all of our benefits and the way we sort of structure the benefit plan to make sure that it was, you know, something that would make sense for women and for men and for people that had a family and were older, for people that were young and didn't have a family. I think ageism is one of the bigger things you could also really levy against our company, founded by a bunch of young people. We're still young people. I think a lot of times our policies don't work for people that, have kids and a family and are older. So we thought about that, rethought all of our benefit programs. We post all the jobs in certain ways and places. There are certain small things we've done in the office to try and make sure that it's a safe place. You know, we've implemented a, you know, behavioral policy, a written, you know, document about how we expect employees to behave to try and make sure that we've set expectations about what is and is not appropriate office discussion material, how you should behave and carry yourself in the office. And, you know, at the end of the day, I feel like trying to make your own little thing at least equitable in terms of its offerings to the outside world is part of it. But we've also donated both time and money to local charities here that are dedicated to getting more women specifically involved in technology. We do some work with a nonprofit in Baltimore that's trying to get kids in the inner city into the technology sort of pipeline, for lack of a better word. So that's kind of some of the stuff we've done. Obviously, none of it has been super successful. If you look at the Our Team section of the website, and the reason we put that there is largely because we want to be transparent about who we are, and because it'd be too easy to take it down and pretend like that wasn't a problem we were facing. So we keep it up there, both as a motivator for ourselves to do better, and also as a way to let prospective clients know who they're hiring, basically. That's kind of the stuff we've done. I certainly don't profess to have any of the answers, and if someone has better ideas about how we can do better, I'm more than happy to hear them. But that's kind of the stuff we've tried, basically. Does that answer the question, you think, Matt?
I think so. The only thing you didn't really talk about is interviewing people and how that goes, and if you've actually tried to hire anybody different than yourself. Or are you hoping that these, like, the things you just said lead to that eventually, and it will just happen because you did all the other stuff?
Something we've talked about before is the idea that until you actually value diversity, like you really think it will make your team better and you think that a candidate is better for having a different perspective than your own or from one that's already represented a majority of your company, everything is going to be tokenism. If you don't actually value that, if you're, the question people ask all the time, which is such a silly question, is, oh, well, if you have, two candidates and they're perfectly evenly matched, and one's black and one's white, and you hire the black candidate, then, you're being reverse racist or, affirmative action or whatever they want to sort of shout about that.
So Annie, every time you have two people that are exactly the same in every single way,
every time that's happened,
every time that actually happens.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Well, the thing I want to point out there is that let's assume that for all intents and purposes, in all measurable ways, they are identical, right? Let's say they've got the exact same number of years of work experience, whatever sort of technical considerations are there. To say that hiring the person of color is reverse racist implies that there is no value in having a person of color in the office. And I'm saying there is. There is a very real value in it. That's part of the deal. I think if you actually...
Well, say what the value is. I mean, what is it? Diversity of thought? And you can do better work.
I think we do better work when we have a more diverse workforce. I think people that come from different perspectives, different cultural backgrounds, raised in different places of different ages, I think we are more aware of possible pitfalls and things we're designing, and we're more able to design something correctly the first time and thoughtful the first time instead of screwing it up and then realizing, oh, wait, the name of this app is some horrible swear word in Spanish or something. I think all of those things make us better designers. And I also think it's better for the future health of the company. If we continue to grow and we don't start solving these problems of sort of how homogenous the company can be at times, we will start to not appeal to potentially great candidates who don't want to work at our office because they assume it's a big bro-y douche pile. So there's very real, very practical benefits, and both to the design process as well as to the future of the company that I think are actual values that we care about. All that said, at the end of the day, we, have been very careful about interviewing a certain number of candidates or, posting a job a certain number of places before making anybody an offer. But when it comes down to it, I have not gotten to the point where I can say we have this excellent candidate that is head and shoulders better than every other candidate we've been able to find in 6 months, but we're not going to hire them because they're a white dude. I can't justify that. At the end of the day, it's like we're trying everything we know how to try. And I'm talking to people that are smarter than me and doing my best, but we're a small company. We have to hire the people that are the best at their jobs, and we have to get better at finding people that are the best at their jobs that are not like us. And it's a constant journey. I don't know. It's like I really don't want to be that guy that talks about how hard it is to not hire white dudes, but fuck, man, it's the hardest thing I've ever done in my whole life. Like convincing people to even come in for interviews, posting jobs on sites that are dedicated to people of color and technology and getting zero applicants for 3 months. It's very, very challenging. And I think it's challenging because of how stupid I am about it, honestly. I think our perspective is so limited that it's like we're like Mr. Magoo wandering through the technology world, like unaware of why anybody would not apply to work at our amazing job.
Yeah.
I will also say that I think it's difficult. No, I'm not going to give more excuses. I will say it's hard. And that's not an excuse. We need to do better, but it's been challenging forever.
Well, if we're lucky, this episode will come full circle. Someone will take one of your quotes, take it out of context, or just with full context, and call you out. And then we'll shame you. We'll all publicly shame you for whatever it is that gets pulled out of this conversation. You know, we need some transcripts. We need some transcripts so that that can happen.
We need to link to that picture of me on Instagram where I gave that talk in Canada.
Oh, where you're part of the problem.
Yeah, where I gave a talk in Canada about how white and male graphic design was, and then made a slide talking about how I was part of the problem. I wasn't kidding. I am part of the problem. Like, hello, started a company with three other cis heterosexual white dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Started a podcast with two other cis heterosexual white dudes. Like, I know. I get it. I see how it happens.
Yep, it did. Yeah, that's true. We don't usually get called out for that, but if someone were to point that out,
I'm surprised we don't get called out for
it
more.
It wouldn't be untrue.
Well, here's the thing, like something I've really struggled with is like, so yeah, started a company, completely unaware of these issues. If the rest of Friends of the Web were to be on a boat that sinks in the middle of the North Atlantic and I'm all left alone tomorrow, the next company I start, I would not start it with only white dudes. I've learned that lesson. I've learned how far it sets you back. And how it changes people's perceptions of you. I won't do it again, but I've done it already. It's already my job. We have an office. We have a 10-year lease. That's not getting undone. And the same thing goes for this podcast. When we started this podcast, this was not at all on our minds. At least definitely not on my mind. Was it on your mind at all?
No, it wasn't.
Same thing. If we were to start another podcast, I don't think it would be set up the same way, largely because I'm aware of the flaws in this format. But that said, like, I don't think any of that is an excuse to not like do your thing and like put stuff out there. Like, just because so many white men do so many things alone doesn't mean that we should stop doing things as white men. It just means we should be conscious of it.
You shouldn't just sit in a dark room and pity yourself.
I mean, I honestly had moments where I thought like, God, should we unstart this company? Should we change something dramatically? Should we have a shift in leadership? Should we change the podcast in a huge dramatic way? Because, you know, this podcast is what it is at this point, right? Like, I don't think we're changing it now. 150 episodes in, it's white dudes talking about design. If you're into that, you know, come on over for a party. If you're not, totally understand. I don't think we purport to be any holistic, you know, all-encompassing, completely fair and equitable discussion about anything. I think if we were to sell ourselves that way, that's where it gets problematic. And that's why I think criticism of somebody that, for example, does like an interview show about artists and designers and only talks to men, that's fucked up, because your whole idea is that you talk to a bunch of creative people and, oh, you only found men? But like, if we want to get on a podcast and have a conversation with ourselves that a few people chime into, I don't see a problem with that, honestly. And it's been a long journey of me waffling back and forth on vaguely hating myself and, you know, just trying to get better about it. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to stop making stuff. I'm going to try and make things more responsibly in the future. For the stuff that's already there, I can only try and steer the ship in the right direction. And honestly, like, and we've had conversations before where it's like, the problems that we're facing are largely problems with just Friends of the Web, for example. Like, there are just issues with how our policies used to be and probably still are that, you know, set us up for failure in this regard. But also, these problems are, like, totally huge and systematic and outside of our control, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that overall, there are like less women in technology, because when, you know, young girls 20 years ago were growing up, they were, you know, discouraged from playing with computers, or they got to college even to go to an IST program, and all of their peers were douchebag dudes that treated them like shit until they left. Like, those are real things that we have no hope of possibly solving from our end. So we've thought about like, hey, maybe we just, you know, stop spending all this time and energy trying to hire the right people and trying to, you know, do as good of a job as we can. And let's instead just hire whoever, become one of those companies that's all dudes, and we'll just give big giant pile of money to a whole bunch of nonprofits or charities that are trying to fix these problems on a lower level. We talked about that as a possible like plan for how to deal with this. Ultimately, I think that's not a great idea either for a million reasons, but we talked about it because it's like, what do you do? It's hard. Shit. You get to cut all the times I said it's hard. It's the worst. I don't want to be that
no,
guy.
No, I know. I understand. Fuck. Because it's still true. It still is difficult. If it weren't difficult, you would have solved the problem already. So it's true. It's just annoying. It's kind of an annoying thing to say. And I'm sure it's incredibly annoying to hear if you're on the other side of it and you're thinking, I'm just trying to make my way in the world. And all you're doing is telling me how hard it is for you. Guess how hard it is for me. You know?
It's the fucking pits. It's
I can't imagine that sounds great. So I'm sure it's annoying, Andy. I'll cut a couple of them. But I don't think you're wrong. I just think hard relative to some things, not hard relative to overcoming society.
Yeah. And I oftentimes, you know, the hard excuse often comes as a, we tried everything we could. And I don't mean to say that at all. We have definitely not tried everything we could. We're always trying new things and trying to figure out the best way to handle stuff. And frankly, like, talking about these issues publicly is a big part of my strategy. Like, if people hear me talking about these things and at least know that I care about them, you know, when we offer people a job, this is something I say to them. I'm like, hey, listen, you woman that we're offering a job to, I know the makeup of the company is not great. I know it's not going to be awesome to be like the second or third woman in the office. That kind of blows. So this is something we're conscious of. We want to get better at. And then those people become part of the hiring process after they, you know, join up. Mm-hmm. Or they don't accept the job offer and they go somewhere else for a million reasons that I'll never know. But it's, you know, we talk about it. That's like that's my only strategy for all of life. Just talk about it. And then people at least can't hold it against you because you didn't have any secrets. I mean, that's what overall, that is what I want to communicate. Like, we are not doing a great job. We have been trying things that we have read about. I have read so many blog posts and zines and books and quarterlies and everything to try and understand these issues better. Mm-hmm. And we're trying. And we haven't done a great job. I have no misconceptions about that. All I can do is try, though.
This has been On the Grid, episode 154. This week, I want you to go back to idisagreewithandy.man.gold. Anything you disagree with about this episode, or you agree, you can use it for that too. Fill out the form, send us some input, we'd love to hear from you. As always, thanks to Glassboy for the ad music and Girlfriends for the theme music, and of course, thanks to you for listening. Until next week.